So little is truly said of Simon of Cyrene that it's difficult to draw any serious or real conclusions from the story in terms of Simon or future impact on our faith. A great example, oftentimes misused or abused in Christian community, and it's been used, oh, you have to carry your cross, and remember Simon of Cyrene, he had to bear the cross when he came in, and then people make stuff of, he probably didn't even know Jesus, didn't know who he was, but had to bear it. And all of this is supposed to help us to carry our cross, so to speak, whatever that means. And then there's all this different talk about, well, what do you mean by carry your cross? Is that the burden, like I should carry this broken relationship that I'm in? Is that the cross you're talking about? Is it the cross of, my infirmity of some sort? Is it my addiction? Is it, what do you mean by carrying my cross? I don't know. Don't know. Don't even want to really go there. I think that's not a great use of the story or very creative way to think about it. Here's what the Bible actually says about this story. Luke says very little. Mark gives us a little bit more meat, but not much. Here's Luke's one verse. As the soldiers led him away, they seized Simon of Cyrene, who was on his way in from the country, and put his cross on him and made him carry it behind Jesus. That's it. That's Luke. That's all we know. And Mark's is this. They pressed into service a passerby coming from the country, Simon of Cyrene, father of Alexander and Rufus. That's what Mark adds. So he had two sons that we know of. I don't know if there were other children back in Cyrene and Libya, but for now, all we know is there were two boys, and we don't even know if they were there. How did Mark know this? Mark writes this gospel because it's basically dictated. The stories that Mark writes about are Peter's stories. That's how Mark writes this. Mark writes this because Peter basically told him the story. You don't know much. We got a little bit from Ray this morning. Thank you. It is a Greek colony, but they also had a Jewish community there. About 100,000 Judeans during the reign of Ptolemy Soter from 325 to 285 BC was persecuting Jews at the time, and a whole bunch took off and they went to North Africa, basically around the corner from Egypt. And they said, we'll go there, it's safer, which is what, right? Remember, Mary and Joseph did as well. There was some persecution. Jesus was in trouble. The babies were going to be killed. They take off. Where do they go? Egypt. Israel has this thing for escaping to Egypt until they figure out they need to be free. So there's a Jewish community there and also a Greek colony as well. It's also noted to have become a center for Christianity, for early Christianity. And the Syrian Jews had a synagogue in Jerusalem, specifically for them. So for Greek and Jewish believers in Judaism, have a synagogue in Jerusalem where the temple is. And the only reason they went to that synagogue was basically because it would be their space to have their annual feasts. So while everybody is coming to Jerusalem for the Passover or maybe the Feast of Tabernacles or, one of the annual feasts that were prominent in Jewish tradition, anybody who traveled from Cyrene in Libya went to the synagogue. Not to say that they might not have visited the temple, but why did they have a synagogue there? Don't even know that. Can't even tell you that. I guess it's not actually that important.
in the long run. Tradition has it that Rufus and Alexander became missionaries. There's no proof of that. There's scholars that make this assumption, but there's actually no proof. Other than that Paul writes in his letter to the Church of Rome, "Greet Rufus, chosen in the Lord, and his mother, who has also been a mother to me." Okay, fine. That doesn't mean that this was Rufus, the son of Simon of Cyrene, and that mother and son subsequent to Simon's, conversion, moved from Egypt to Jerusalem or to someplace, near Rome, and we're now supporting Paul. These are huge jumps in logic. Massive. We're told that, and I can see the sense that you might make of this one. This is in Acts 11. "Now those who had been scattered in the persecution that broke out when Stephen was killed traveled as far as Phoenicia and Cyprus and Antioch, spreading the word only among Jews. Some of them, however, men from Cyrene, went to Antioch and began to speak to Greeks also." First time that the gospel is now being brought to the Greek community, specifically by believers who were from Cyrene, a Greek colony where there were Jewish believers. Is that a possibility? That kind of makes sense. I mean, the puzzle, you know, when you try to get a piece in your puzzle to fit and you're pretty sure it fits, I would be pretty sure of this piece. You could say, I think that goes there. Same color, the angles look good. But it's still possible it's not an exact fit. We don't know. We do know that there's a thing called the Syrian movement, or the Simon movement. It's in the UK and Ireland largely. And it's a movement of people that gather volunteers to give support and help to basically homeless people. That's their big focus. They do other disadvantaged groups as well, but they tend to focus on homelessness. I wonder if Siloam Mission here in Winnipeg should rename itself. Lots that you could come up with, and lots that history has come up with. Here's what I'd like to offer you about the story this morning. And we're thinking of this as the sacred way, right? And I had said that we maintained every single Sunday that we've been doing this in the season of Lent, that the sacred way is a focusing of us on our way to the cross, just as it was for Jesus on the way to Jerusalem, on the way to Golgotha, on the way to his imminent death. His focus is narrowed. Just like everybody else, especially in palliative care, people who are near the end, everything else takes a back seat. All you care about is this. That's all you can focus on. That's kind of sacred way. That's John the Baptist saying, "He must increase, I must decrease." That's difficult for us to do, especially in today's society. I can be distracted by so much stuff, it's ridiculous. I envy my dad's generation when he first came here from the Netherlands, and his big task for an entire winter was to chop wood so they wouldn't freeze to death in their little log cabin in Cochrane, Ontario, Northern Ontario. That's all they had to worry about, the boys. The boys had to go out, chop wood, get it in the house, stoke the fire, we're freezing. That's all they had to worry about. Wow. I can't imagine young people being that focused on one thing for a whole winter. They could afford to think more narrowly about something and to stay seriously focused and give it some time and some energy. Nowadays, time and energy is in a million directions. How do you stay focused today? Let alone practice what we're calling a sacred way. Well, I think this story is good news for that, really. Because we're not going to talk about Simon and what Simon did as being the end-all and be-all or the most amazing thing, but what God did. First of all, from this story, it becomes just on a obvious, kind of a plain, simplistic level, Jesus needed help. He needed help to carry the cross. Here is God needing help. And you'd think, oh, well, Case, that's an obvious thing. Think about that for a minute. God needed help. He needs us at times. Think about that. He needs us. He sent Jesus to earth to connect with us. With you. It's pretty profound. He needed nothing, and yet he needed that little colt to ride into Jerusalem, and he needed his disciples to go and get that colt and bring it back for him. He needs nothing. He could have turned stones into bread, no big deal. And yet he needed that little boy's fishes and loaves. He needed. He was the living water, and yet he asked a Samaritan woman to get him a drink. He needed her to do something for him. He needed for his disciples to take a moment to pray for him in the Garden of Gethsemane. He needed them. Do you get that? God needs you. That's pretty cool. Now, no, don't get all freaked out and carried away and go, yeah, that's important. Because, on the other hand, God doesn't need us at all to accomplish anything. And that's the kicker. He needs you, but not to accomplish something. We need to get this through our thick, Western dumb heads. God needs us, but not to get something done. He just needs us. That should marinate. We should just kind of soak that. I'd like to chop wood for a whole winter, not have to do anything but chop wood and think on that. Just that. He needs me. And not to get anything done. Wow. Let that take you somewhere. Okay. Now, he needs you, but you don't know why exactly and how he might use you. And it's not really to get something done, but in a sense it is, because he needed to get someone to carry the cross for him. Simon. So Simon does it. And Mark in the gospel writer is just a passerby. He was just happened to be there. You know, I think sometimes when we think about the fact that God needs you, you could just be a passerby. We talk about that, right? Oh, that person was there at exactly the right time. What timing was that? We talk a little bit about timing when we say, oh, that was a near miss. Man, had I left the house, 10 seconds later, I'd be dead. We talk like that. Such a near miss accident on the highway. Oh, had I left just 5 minutes earlier, could you imagine how that would change our life and what would happen? Timing. Timing is everything. Notice it's not Simon's timing. Oh, he was at the right place at the right time. Whose timing is that? God's. His timing. It's a thing he's doing. Now, the other thing about that is, we think about the little things that we do, like Simon carrying his cross, and then much has been made in the past about, oh, what reward shall be Simon's for having carried the cross of our master? That's a Western thought, isn't it? What am I going to get out of this? What's Simon going to get out of having done what he did? Because that was pretty amazing. Now we begin to rate the kinds of stuff that we do. Oh, yes, well, you do this, I do this. So-and-so does this, this is what I do. And there's a thought that my stuff, what I do for God, is going to bear some fruit. And it's my fruit. And I'll get rewarded for my fruit. What a load of hooey. Really. It's God's timing. He's the one who calls us and sets it up. This is like you and I with a bunch of people out in the field, got a bag of seed, and we're scattering, we're sowing seed the old way, right? Get a handful, throw some out. Okay, so at the end of the year, all the grain is grown, it's up. You're going to walk into that field and say, that stalk right there, that's mine. I planted that one. A, that's just dumb as a bag of hammers. And B, really it's yours? So you made the sun come up and you gave it sunshine, did you? Nice one. You got the rain to come at just the right time and watered that sucker and made it grow? You rock. Really? You know, in the end, when the field ripe unto harvest is waving in the wind of the Spirit, moving in time, it is for His glory and His grace. It is evidence of His mercy and His timing. And He allowed you and I to be part of it. But for us then to sit back and to claim some, oh, that's mine, yes, well, He used me, I'm important, And I'll be rewarded for is almost ridiculous inane thinking. We play the part that God has given. Amazing. He doesn't need us to get anything done, but he needs us. And then He doesn't know how He's going to use you, but He is going to use you and give you a part to play. And can it be an unusual set of circumstances? I mean, that's something that we can glean from this story of Simon. It's a pretty unusual deal. I particularly don't want to carry someone's, means of death on my back publicly, really. I don't know about you. I kind of wouldn't want to get picked for that, really. Could Christ enlist your help for something that you kind of really don't want to do? Now, I could make something out of this and talk about, if you've seen the movie The Passion of Christ and the depiction of Simon Cyrene in that movie, has Simon walking, carrying the cross, and actually helping Jesus up Golgotha, up this rocky, craggy hill, to where he's going to be crucified, because Jesus can't make it up the hill on his own. And there's glimpses, if you remember how those shots were done in that portrayal, of Simon connecting, eyeball to eyeball with this suffering Jesus, while Jesus is weeping and gasping and trying his hardest to get up this hill and to and to do it since he's been, you know, he's almost bled out. I mean, his back is opened up like a piece of hamburger. I mean, if you just had the picture of that in reality, it would be next to impossible for this man to do anything. And so Simon has to help him. And in the helping and in the process, there's a connection that happens between Simon and Jesus that, I mean, you don't see it. There's no thing in the movie that shows you, oh, now Simon is a believer. He's also now a follower of Jesus. But you can pretty well surmise that by the manner in which the shots are done. Was that possible? Is it possible for us? Is it possible for God to enlist us in some way that's really awkward and difficult? Is it possible that God may use what we consider to be a cross to bear in our life, a difficulty, a handicap, a hardship, an addiction, and inside that thing, see us, get us eyeball to eyeball? Just a thought. May God enlist something to get you and I? Apparently, as this story would seem to indicate, yes. And that brings me to just being a follower. It's God that picks Simon out just as easily as he picks Matthew out. Just as easily as he picked Peter. Ordinary people doing ordinary stuff. Or, you know, corrupt, insane people doing corrupt, insane stuff, as is the case with Matthew. He's a traitor. Matthew, as an example of being a disciple, is really interesting. I mean, you know, he's the dude at 7-Eleven doing crack deals with middle school children. He's a nasty character. He's collecting taxes from his own people, from a government, and he doesn't have to do it. He bid on the contract, which was the case, to actually collect tax. He bid on the contract, which means he already had money. He's a rich people bidding on this opportunity to bleed his own people and get richer in the process. He's a jerk. He's Trump. I mean, think about it. And Jesus goes, yeah, you come with me. And then doesn't ask Matthew to do all kinds of crazy things. Seriously, think about it. This, you can get this from Andy Stanley YouTubing on followers of Christ. He's got really cool stuff on this. And he makes the point, he just goes to Matthew's house for supper. It's like Matthew could say, what do you all want me to do? What cross do I have to bear? Well, let's go to your house. I'll make it easy for supper. And you can have prostitutes come and stuff, whatever, doesn't matter. That's Jesus. That's God. Can he use you? Can he ask you to do something? Can he, in terms of tugging on your heartstrings to become his follower? Does it have to be something significant and outrageous? No. Do you have to be someone special? No. Does he have to make it terribly difficult and hard? No. No, and the goal is to do an eyeball to eyeball. I mean, Simon of Cyrene was privy to be on that road and hear Jesus address people like Mary and Martha who were weeping right along the road on his way to his death. Simon of Cyrene got to watch Jesus connect with and eyeball people and have people call out to him and talk to him on his way. Friends, enemies. He got to see it all close up. He was in the thick of it.
Wow. You know what I think the most amazing thing of this story is? That Jesus picked Simon out of the crowd.
For whatever reason. And I don't know. Was it to speak to the Greek people of Antioch years later? Was it so that Simon's wife could be like a mother to Paul in the future, or Rufus become a missionary? I don't know. Don't know.
I don't know.
I don't want to make this story out to be so much about what Simon does. It's about what God is doing.
There is a Dutch reformer, pastor, and theologian, and politician. Who cried out, there is not one square inch of all creation over which Jesus does not cry out, that's mine. And the same thing is happening in this story. Even while he is carrying a cross, even while he is carrying Simon's sins in his heart, on his mind. Amazing. How badly does he want you? Or maybe how badly does he want one of your friends or one of your family members? And it's not about you going out and doing some amazing thing and preaching to them and, you know, whatever. I don't know what act it will be. It may be a really tiny little thing. You have no clue what he will do with it, what he will grow it into. Like some tiny little grass seed that you tossed out. And he will give it what is needed because he's the one doing the calling. He's the one saying, that's mine. He's the one orchestrating the timing. He's the one saying, it's all about me wanting to be with you. I want you. I need you. And then he calls you and says, hey, want to help me be part of this? Here's a little thing for you to do. Wow. Remember that. Let's not get carried away with what part God is asking us to play. Oh, it's so great, it's awesome. Nor think so much in terms of how the reward might pan out for us. But just seriously, he cared enough to say, yeah, you, come on. Join me and do this. That should be a mind blower. So we have this. Can you fire that up on there? So this got set up by Daryl, I think. Well, not this. It'll come. What's it called again? Yeah. So, okay. So... you guys see that, right? So wash someone's car. Well, it's a little cold for that. Let me get another one. You can do this too. Make a candygram for the police department. I could get arrested for that. Make a thank you sign for sanitation workers. I could do that. I don't have a librarian. Who goes to the library anymore? Okay. Okay, well, there are some. Write a thank you note for your mail carrier.
not sure every, if you still have a mail carrier, quick, write a thank you note because you might not have them for much longer. Okay, so what I'd like you to do is, I can do that. Fill a kindness jar with candy for another family. I do that all the time. So pick one. So what after the service, you go see Daniel, and then you click through one, pick one. One thing, one small thing, an act of service. That's what Simon of Cyrene did. And one that resonates with you as if God is, you can hear God almost saying, yeah, that's yours. And then go for that. And you don't know where that will go. You got no guarantees, just like Simon of Cyrene and his story and the rest of the Bible. You have no clue where that's going to go. It could do amazing things, but know this. Know this. Ultimately, however you get it done on Tuesday or Wednesday or Friday or a Saturday or next Sunday or whatever, it'll be about his timing. He picked a thing, he picked you, ultimately, he will grow it, he will do what he will do. The story is truly about obedience. And know this, when you click through these, and you get to pick one out after, right? Remember these words. The theologian was Abram Kuyper. There is not one square inch of all creation, of every part of it, of every act listed here over which Jesus does not cry, that's mine. And his desire is simply to connect with you and I. That's the good news. That's the good news. Even in his dying, his desire was to connect with Simon of Cyrene. With his last breath, it was to connect with those he came to save, you and I. Join me in a prayer to thank him for that. Our God in heaven, it is difficult to imagine sometimes how being the creator of all that is, having given breath and life, being the orchestrator, the planner, and the timer, that you could call us, that you could tug on our heartstrings specifically or use something in our life to get us eyeball to eyeball in the very way in which you do. But thank you. I pray, Lord, that we may see that all the more clearly in the lives of our loved ones, our friends, our family, and that we may know you may equally use them at times to touch us. We may receive and give in the same manner, never knowing how it will mature and how it will grow. So I pray, Lord, that you would, I suppose, just generate in this heart of ours a willingness and an openness to have you tug on the shirt sleeve of our hearts and our lives, to speak into our ear, to cue us, to be your partners in loving this creation and the people in it, and to share with them as best we can good news in the simplest ways possible. And we entrust our obedience to you and to the work of your Spirit, that you will bring out of that the very thing you've intended. We ask you this. We give you our thanks for it in the name of Christ. Amen. you. May he cause his face to shine upon you and to be gracious to you. And may he turn his face towards you and grant you his wonderful and amazing peace. Amen.